From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The war on drugs has filled our prisons, but not stopped the drug trade. It's based on a misunderstanding, says my guest today, neuroscientist Carl Hart. He grew up in drug country. Now he knows the society and the science. And he says, stop the war on drugs. This hour, On Point, a call to reframe our understanding of drugs and drug abuse. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation never ends. Is it time to rethink? Is it time to decriminalize across the board? Or does that sound nuts? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Dr. Carl Hart, neuroscientist and professor of psychology at Columbia University, author of a new memoir and call to action. It's titled High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery That Challenges Everything You Know About Drugs and Society. Carl Hart, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me, Tom. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you right here. Tell us a little about yourself so we can understand the background to your perspective. It turns out to be pretty important.
Well, one of the questions that people oftentimes ask me about, particularly this book, is like, how did you get from point A to point B? How did you go from one of the toughest neighborhoods in Miami to being the first African-American tenured professor in the sciences at Columbia? Well, when I think about that, I think about the many forks in the roads that were there. And the major, I guess the major thing that really helped me go from being a person who also engaged in petty crime, also used drugs and so forth, the major thing was my sort of participation in athletics in high school. I really loved playing basketball and football. I played basketball throughout high school, thought I would get a basketball scholarship. But in order to play basketball, one of the things that the school required was that I maintained a C average. So that ensured that I would at least graduate from high school. And so I did graduate from high school. And I also had some really strong women in my life, my sisters, my grandmother. They wanted to make sure that I was staying in school, that I was playing basketball. But unfortunately, I didn't get a basketball scholarship. And as a result, my guidance counselor wanted to make sure that I didn't just stay around Miami because she thought that I would get into trouble. And she was probably right. And so I spoke with military recruiters and ultimately decided to join the Air Force. And while in the Air Force, I was stationed overseas in Japan, Okinawa, and in England. But in England, my worlds just opened up. I started to go to college. I started to see a different society. I started to see some of the problems that were wrong in the United States from the British perspective. It just opened up my world. Mm. And I had mentors in the Air Force, and then I completed my undergraduate studies right after getting out of the military, went on to graduate school because of these mentors, a wide range of sort of opportunities that I had that other folks in similar situations didn't have. And so it's important that people understand that I wasn't special. I just had some options, and I had some people who were there to support me, even though I was engaged in some of these behaviors that were not consistent with someone succeeding in mainstream.
And so we end up with this combination in a man who has a unique perspective, maybe not unique, but pretty special on the street and the science of drugs, a neuropsychopharmacologist who can look at it from both sides. What was your neighborhood in Miami? What was it like growing up?
Well, I lived throughout, by the time I was in the eighth grade, I had gone to eight different schools because when I was 6 years old, my mom and dad divorced, and my mom left for a short period of mm-hmm. time, and we were scattered about with relatives. And so I grew up between Miami, Hollywood, and that sort of area, in neighborhoods that were primarily black, poor, neighborhoods in which people might call the ghetto, but certainly I think that might be an overstatement. There was a lot of love, a lot of sort of support that outsiders probably couldn't see, but certainly a lot of people in my neighborhood got in trouble, in part because of limited opportunities, limited skills, but these sorts of things were ultimately blamed on things like drugs. And I also blamed drugs for many of the problems until I eventually started to study drugs, started to become more critical in my thinking.
How did you see drugs in those days when you were a young man on tough streets in Miami? How did you look at them? What did you think of them?
Well, so when I was a young man, of course, I tried marijuana, I tried cocaine, but we were told that folks who got involved with drug use, particularly something like crack cocaine, you would be devastated and your life, you would be addicted, your life would fall apart and so forth. But being a young person experimenting, I thought that not me. And certainly it didn't happen to me. But then I thought I was special. That's why it didn't happen to me. But I believe that the problems that the other kids in my neighborhood were having were related to their drug use or drug selling or something of that nature. So I thought drugs were evil. I thought that drugs were the source of the problems in our community.
So now you've gone down a long road of scientific investigation. You've still got that background. And you're saying to us, we need to reframe our thinking about drugs. In what direction? How? Dr. Hart.
Well, maybe I should say a little something about what I've been doing for the past 20 years, mm-hmm. because what I have to say about drugs, some people might find it somewhat radical. But if you understand what I've been doing, you may not. You'll see the logic. So the past 20 years, I have been studying the effects of drugs like nicotine, cocaine, methamphetamine, a wide range of drugs on laboratory animals as well as people in the labs, trying to clearly understand what drugs do and what drugs don't do. So for the past 20 years, I've been conducting these types of research. And what I have, the conclusion that I have come to is this. Drugs certainly shouldn't be taken lightly. They can certainly have negative effects if people don't understand the potential for harm. That's clear.
Okay.
The same could be said for driving an automobile. If you don't understand the potential harm that could happen as a result of driving automobiles recklessly, you could get in trouble. So if we think about, I have learned after my 20-some-odd years of studying drugs, that drugs are similar to automobiles. They could have positive effects. Automobiles be beneficial if you need to drive some distance and get there in a short period of time. Great. Drugs are similar. They are, when we think about alcohol, there are people who use alcohol on a recreational basis and safely. It decreases anxiety. It increases social interactions, a wide range of things. But if used improperly, you can certainly get in trouble.
Are you saying there's a positive, proper way of using crack?
I'm not saying that, I'd like to make this absolutely clear. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that anybody should engage in illegal activity. I want to make that clear. But what I am saying is that some of the assumptions that we have in terms of how we regulate crack versus other things, it's wrong. And one of those assumptions is that crack, for example, if you take a hit of crack, you instantly become addicted. That's just absolutely wrong. There's no scientific evidence to support that. In fact, all the scientific evidence says the opposite. That's one. Two, people think that crack cocaine leads to things like cognitive impairment. Again, there's no scientific evidence to support that. That's just wrong. And so all I'm saying is that once we look at what the empirical information actually says, then we can decide as a society to more rationally regulate the drug if the society decides so.
Does that mean decriminalization? Does it mean for all drugs?
Yes. So what I argue in the book in chapter 17, the last chapter of High Price, is that we should decriminalize all drugs. If and I have to tell you why I say that. I say that because more than 80% of the people that we arrest for drugs are for simple possession. And once you get a drug arrest, it impairs or your ability to make a contribution in the society. So you throttle people's ability to make a contribution in the society. When we think about the numbers of people who have used illicit drugs, for example, the president before him, George Bush, the president before him, Bill Clinton, they all used illegal drugs at some point in their life. If they would have gotten caught, their ability to make a contribution to our society would have been severely impaired.
Carl Hart, we've got to take a short break right here. If you'd be good enough to stand by there in New York, it's great to have you with us. Professor of psychology, neuropharma psychologist from Columbia University, author of the new memoir, Call to Action. It's called High Price, a neuroscientist's journey of self-discovery that challenges everything you know about drugs and society. Here's Home is Where the Hatred Is, Gil Scott-Heron. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Home is where I live inside my white powder dreams. Home was once an empty vacuum that's filled now with my silent screams. Home is where the needle marks tried to heal my broken heart, and it might not be such a bad idea if I never went home again, home again, home again, home again. Kick it, quit it, kick it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are hearing this hour a new call to end the war on drugs from a neuropsychopharmacologist, African-American, grew up on mean streets, now at Columbia, who says we need to reframe our thinking about drugs and the problems around them. His new memoir is High Price, a neuroscientist's journey of self-discovery that challenges everything you know about drugs and society. Here's a different voice that defined this country's approach to drugs for a long time, or represents that approach anyway. A 1980s public service announcement from actor Clint Eastwood warns of the dangers of crack, rock, cocaine, under the tagline, "Don't even try it."
See this cute little vial here? It's crack, rock, cocaine, the most addictive form. You think it's the glamour drug of the 80s? Well, that's the point of this friendly little reminder. It can kill you. And if you've got to die for something, this sure as hell ain't it.
Carl Hart joins us from New York. Dr. Hart, that's the sort of big message environment you grew up in. What have been the consequences, in your view, of the war on drugs inspired by that perspective?
There have been few things that have had more harmful effect on public education and also on poor communities than commercials like that. And I should say why. It may seem on the surface that those sorts of commercials, those advertisements, were neutral. In fact, they were not, because what happened was that they shaped an environment in which the country thought that it had to go after crack cocaine with such ferocity at all costs. Let's get rid of these drugs. Mind you, the costs were bared primarily by poor communities and then black people. So we created in 1986, as a result of those type of advertisements, 1986, we passed the legislation, the infamous 100-to-1 crack powder cocaine differential. So that meant that crack cocaine was punished 100 times more harshly than powder cocaine. And when all the evidence was in, more than 85% of the people who were prosecuted under these laws, which carried a mandatory 5-year penalty, were black. And so the impact of that sort of that misinformation, it's not even correct. That misinformation has had a tremendous negative effect on black people in this country.
No question about that. And if we went in your direction, decriminalizing more or less across the board, what would the effect of that be?
The effect of decriminalization would be, first of all, we would increase more public resources for other things like drug education, other sort of areas that we need resources for. Because now you will not be locking people up for these petty drug crimes. We arrest every year 1.5 million people for drugs. More than 80% of them are for simple possession. So now you save all of those public resources. We spend $26 billion a year on our fight in the war on drugs. And so that would free up, or that certainly would give us some options, other options, in terms of dealing with those public resources.
Alvin Poussaint joins us in just a moment. Carl Hart is with us right now, author of High Price. Chris is calling from Toronto, Canada. Hi, Chris. You're on the air. Thanks for calling. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. I pretty much echo what the doctor's saying, and from my experience, I've sold drugs to people, and the majority of them were people who were using them to blow off some steam. I found that the people who had problems abusing them were people who were dealing with other issues, and they were just using the particular substance to, to either ease the pain or mask the pain or do something with that underlying pain that they were dealing with. It wasn't particularly the drug, and so therefore I believe that you should decriminalize drugs. I think it should be a graduated system, though. I don't think a 16-year-old should be able to go out on the street and get cocaine. I don't think a 16-year-old should be able to go out on the street and get marijuana. I think it should be graduated. I think, when you turn 19, you should be able to have a drink. When you turn 24, should be able to smoke some marijuana, and then maybe when you're 28, you should be allowed to go to a government dispensary where they can monitor your usage, how much you're buying, and buy some cocaine. But certain drugs, certain substances like crystal meth, heroin, or even crack, I think are just a little too dangerous for them to be freely available to people. And I just wanted to make one more point. I think the one drug that should be mandatory for all people to take at least once in their lives should be MDMA, ecstasy, because the effects that that particular chemical has on you are so profound that everybody should try it once to experience the profound change that you can make in yourself.
Chris, we've got it. We're going from the heavy hammer on the one hand to mandatory use on the other. That would be quite a ride, but we'll see. Fix the pain. That's the problem, not the drugs. Let me hold that for just one moment. We get one more caller here. Hal in Montpelier, Vermont. Hal, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you think?
I think that decriminalization of drugs such as crack cocaine and other drugs would be a terrible slippery slope to be going down. I'm in total disagreement with Governor Shumlin's having the legislature pass decriminalization in Vermont. I just think it's a terrible way to go. I am in recovery. I have been for 6+ years, and crack cocaine brought me to my knees, and all it took was one hit. And by the way, I'm in recovery for a multitude of substance abuse, but nevertheless, I've recovered. I have a job. I have a car. I have a house. I'm married. And I just think that it's the wrong way to go. I think it's like slapping someone on the wrist for what really is some grievous offenses.
Hal, we've got it. There's a lot on the table here. I appreciate your call very much as well. Carl Hart, I'm going to bring both of those to you. There's a lot there. But I want to, if I may, welcome into our conversation with me here in the studio, Dr. Alvin Poussaint, psychiatrist at Harvard University Medical School, specializes in African-American families, but the research goes wide. He's co-author with Bill Cosby of Come On, People, On the Path from Victims to Victors. He's author himself of Lay My Burden Down, The Mental Health Crisis Among African Americans, back in 2000. Alvin Poussaint, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
So there's a lot on the table here already, but at the heart of it is Carl Hart's argument that the war on drugs has done more damage than good by a long shot in his assessment, and that we ought to decriminalize pretty much right across the board, and address problems that lie beneath drug use rather than going after the drugs themselves. What do you say?
I think the war on drugs Dr. Hart is correct. It's had devastating effects on the black community, the black family, and particularly on young black men. What happened with the war on drugs is that it went after black men and Latinos and incarcerated them. So we have a prison population of blacks and Latinos for possession of drugs. Mm-hmm. The experience of incarceration itself helps to destroy them mentally much more than the drug would do anything to them, mm-hmm. particularly if they're using it recreationally. So that this has been a profound problem, and people are paying a lot of attention to the fact that a lot of black males have indeed been almost eliminated from opportunities and chances in American society because of war on drugs. And because of disparities in sentencing, it's mostly minority men who got those five-year mandatory sentences for 5 grams of crack cocaine, and mostly white men and Latinos, too, use powdered cocaine, and they had to have 500 grams to get those mandatory five-year sentences. That's changed a little bit. I think in 2010, Obama signed some legislation so that the ratio, instead of being 100 to 1, mm-hmm. is 18 to 1, but that's not good enough. I don't know that they should be putting them away at all.
Well, do you go after the discrepancy in sentencing, or do you go to Carl Hart's point? He says deregulate this. Well, I mean, decriminalize
this. I think decriminalizing
it. Regulate, but decriminalize.
I want to say something because one of the things that we need to make clear here is we need to make sure that the public understand what I mean when I say decriminalization. Now, decriminalization is not legalization. Decriminalization means that it's still illegal. It simply means, as Dr. Poussaint correctly pointed out, it simply means that people will no longer get criminal records when they're caught with drugs or drug using. Now, drug sales are still illegal, whereas alcohol is legal for people over 21. And when we think about decriminalization, we're talking about adults, not children.
But this is
so
a big change. You're going from potential five years in prison to something like a traffic ticket in decriminalization.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That's a big change.
Portugal, that's right. That's a change for us. But one of the things that we have to do in this country, that we want to be clear, the country has had an adolescent conversation about drugs. What I'm trying to do with High Price is make us have an adult conversation about drugs. Now, that means that we have to be re-educated in terms of some of our assumptions. As your callers point out, the last caller points mm-hmm. out that he's in treatment because of crack cocaine. Yet he also points out that he has multiple drug using problems. Now, what we know is that only a small percentage of people actually meet criteria for addiction who use these substances. Most of them, 80-90% of them, don't have a problem with it.
But what about his safety? He says slippery slope. He says crack brought me to my knees, one hit.
Right. Now, so when we think about that, let's think about alcohol. There are people that can say the same thing about alcohol, but the vast majority of us drink alcohol with no problem. And so if we want, as a society, it's okay if we decide to base our public policy on the small minority of users, that's absolutely fine. As long as the public understands that's what we're doing. The vast majority of people don't have that problem. But yeah, okay, if we decide let's base our public policy on this small number of people, I'm okay with that, as long as we're honest with it.
Carl Hart, please stand by. Alvin Poussaint, so you're critical of the war on drugs, and we understand the serious characterization that you're giving us of it, why you would be opposed to it. So what's the alternative here? Is it decriminalization to your mind?
I think decriminalization is part of the answer. As Dr. Hart points out, it's not the legalization of drugs.
Yes, but it's darn close to it. When you compare 5 years in prison to maybe a $100 fine and no criminal record, it's not legalization, but it's darn close.
Look at the benefits of no criminal record.
Sure, no, I get it. But it's a big difference. I don't want to minimize the difference.
Yeah, that's very, very important. Also, the fact that when they put someone in jail for 5 years, they're not treating quote, the addiction if they think they have one. Mm-hmm. They're not helping them to deal with the drugs. They're just putting them in prison for punishment. If they want to be on drugs, they'll come out and they'll return to the drugs. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a narrow approach to dealing with people who may have a substance abuse problem, who need help from therapists, psychiatrists, from the entire community, and opportunities to fit in the community and have a productive life.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Poussin. On balance, would it be better for the African-American community, just to take one, and it's by no means the only community involved here, by no means, but would it be better on balance for that community if these drugs, maybe a lot of them, maybe all of them, were decriminalized, so you take away the big prison population, everything that goes with that, but you've got regulated but decriminalized drugs there? Would you favor that?
Well, you know, it would not just be decriminalization. I think mm-hmm. also you're talking about a whole program, treatment program, programs to deal with issues of education, families, high schools, that these things are important in building and helping these youth. They can't come out of jail and have opportunities to have a productive life and contribute to the community. So that would be very, very critical in decriminalization.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't just stand alone and be just, yes, Dr. Hart.
Carl Hart, for your approach to... Yes, please.
Can I echo Dr. Poussin's remarks? One of the things that I point out in High Price, I told this deeply personal story. I'm a scientist, and I don't usually communicate this way. One of the reasons that I told this deeply personal story was precisely what Dr. Poussin just said. There are multiple factors other than drugs. We have misplaced our efforts. But when we look at employment, skills, all of these things are far more important to any community than our focus, our misguided focus on drugs. And that's what my story highlights in the book.
Is your call for decriminalization contingent upon a presumption that society would then come in and fix education, grant opportunity, provide skills? Because
Absolutely.
we've been calling for those, all those steps for a long time, and we've never really done those.
We haven't done those because drugs are such great scapegoats. I mean, this has started, this is not new. This started back at the turn of the 20th century. If you go back to 1914, for example, there was a 1914 article published in the New York Times called "Negro Cocaine Fiends Are a New Southern Menace." In that article, it argued that black people in the South, when they take cocaine, they become more, black men, I should say, when they take cocaine, they become more murderous, they become better marksmen, they become unaffected by bullets. And it was used, this is powder cocaine we're talking about.
Yeah,
and
the same one that Cole Porter was writing about in his lovely lyrics.
One that the current president used, the same one that the president before him is thought to have used, the same one. But the point is that it was used as a scapegoat in order to vilify a certain community. The same thing is being done with drugs today. And it also allows us not to focus on the real problems, structural problems. When I came up in the 1980s, there were programs in my community, in these poor communities, that made sure that poor kids had summer jobs. We all worked in the summer. We had money in order to help contribute to the household, buy clothing. All of those programs are gone.
Dr. Carl Hart in New York, please stand by there, author of the new book, High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery That Challenges Everything You Know About Drugs and Society. Dr. Alvin Poussin with me in the studio, author of Lay My Burden Down. It's great to have you both with us right here. Kanye West behind us right here with his new song, New Slave. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Y'all throwing contracts at me. You know that don't read. Throw up some Maybach keys. Say live feet. Can't mess with me, y'all can't mess with ye, y'all can't mess with ye. I moved my family out the country so you can't see where I stay. So go and grab the reporter so I can smash his recorder. He try to confuse it with some BS like the New World Order. Meanwhile, the DEA teamed up with the CCA. They try and lock people up, they try and make new slaves. See, that's that probably on prison, get your peace today. They probably all in the Hamptons, bragging about what they made. Y'all about to turn it up, I'm about to tear it down. I'm about to air it out. Now what the hell they gonna say now? Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are hearing a new call this hour to end the war on drugs from a neuropsychopharmacologist, African-American, grew up on mean streets, now at Columbia, who says we need to reframe our thinking about drugs and the problems around them. Dr. Carl Hart is with us. His new book is High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery That Challenges Everything You Know About Drugs and Society. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Also with me in the studio is Dr. Alvin Poussant, psychiatrist at Harvard University Medical School, co-author with Bill Cosby of Come On, People, author of Lay My Burden Down, with me right here in the studio. We're glad to have him. Lots of response online here. I'll get to some of that. Let me put one of these online comments to you, Carl Hart, there in New York. Frank writes to us about you. And he says, he acts as if there were no horrific consequences to crack cocaine. Those consequences, Frank writes, are why the war on drugs was started. What do you say to that perspective?
That's not true. You know, one of the things I want to make clear is that I am not advocating people go out and use drugs. I have two young kids, one 18, one 12. And so I understand people's concerns about drugs. The point is that the effects of drugs like cocaine has been so badly exaggerated to the public that we, as a result, have created this environment in which we go after these drugs at any cost to minority communities. And so one of the things I know, too, is that if people had the proper education about drugs, even the ones who we don't want to use, and if they do use, we could actually keep them safe. One thing that my 20-some-odd years of studying drugs in the lab has taught me is that drug effects are predictable. That is, as you increase the dose, you also increase the likelihood of toxic effects.
Mm-hmm.
But black men and black boys' interaction with police officers, however, as a result of this war on drugs, however, are not predictable. Too often, the young black person ends up dead. That's why we have Trayvon Martin. That's why we have the kid who was killed in the Bronx, Ramarlee Graham, because the police officers thought he had marijuana. Those sorts of things trouble me more. I'm trying to keep more members of our society safe, not fewer.
Put a sense of scale up to all this. Carl Hart says that would give us an adult conversation rather than an adolescent conversation. Joe in Little Rock, Arkansas is calling. Hi, Joe, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to call in and weigh in a little bit and echo the doctor's sentiments about the need and the call for decriminalization and regulation. And specifically, so you spoke earlier about how a lot of people wouldn't be able to have ascended to certain positions had they been caught and convicted.
Carl Hart points to George W. Bush and Barack Obama among them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm an elected public official in my local government area, and also an Eagle Boy Scout with the Boy Scouts of America. And I also own a small business. And several of these things, specifically the public office, would not have been possible had I been caught and charged with an offense related to drug use in my past. And I've tried, it's easier to say what I haven't done than it is to say what I have, and I haven't done an injectable form of heroin, and I have not tried mescaline or peyote.
So what's your point with this? Are you saying, Joe, that we ought to decriminalize, as Carl Hart suggests, or?
Yes, absolutely. Decriminalize and regulate, and that would afford a much a greater, broader opportunity to a lot of people who otherwise would wind up in the jail system, in the penal system, for petty offenses.
Do you see a discrepancy in your neck of the woods in Little Rock, Joe, racially, between who ends up in that jail or that prison in race terms?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's across the board. It's not just in my area. Of course, it is. It's prevalent throughout this area. It's central and southern United States, and it's very observable. And I know several people who are of great sound mind and judgment, and, you know, they have a good education, and they just have a mar on the record that, you know, does a great deal to significantly hold them back in society,
yeah,
and keep them from obtaining, you know, or ascending to their absolute potential.
Joe, your story speaks to us. You got by that. Many do not. I appreciate your call from Little Rock. Let me get one more from Guthrie, Oklahoma. Steve, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My comment is regarding the commercialization or the industry of processing people caught up in the web of drugs. You just have to look around at the industry along the Texas border, for instance, and other border states, where really you have people who are really churning out the money based on this whole system that we have. You look around here locally, and you'll see every week in a small community of Edmond, Guthrie area, you'll have maybe 10, 20 more people arrested and processed in the system. I really think there's a financial incentive to keep the system the way it is.
Do you mean in incarceration or the drug cartels or who? What, Steve?
I mean of the citizenry. They're being arrested. They're being fined, penalized. Lawyers are making money. The court system basically is part and parcel of it.
Yeah, yeah. And you see it at that level, even in your Edmond Guthrie area there, not a major metropolis. Carl Hart, if I may bring that to you, Tyrone writes us along the same line. Online says, the war on drugs will never end for the same reason the so-called war on terror won't. He says there are too many in government, including law enforcement, who make too much money prosecuting these so-called wars. Carl.
I share his frustration, but I'm an educator, and I have to believe that education will ultimately set us all free. That's one of the reasons that I wrote the book. I wrote the book in this way, so it would be accessible to the greatest numbers of people. And once the people start to see what is really happening in their names, I have to believe that the people will change what's going on.
Dr. Poussin, you wrote Come On, People, On the Path from Victims to Victors with Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby's famous as a kind of a curmudgeon on some of these things. Mm-hmm. Come On, People sort of expresses that. Just get your act together and act right and straighten up. And would somebody with Bill Cosby's perspective sign off on decriminalizing drugs?
That I don't know. You would have to ask Bill Cosby. But I think his position fundamentally is that you shouldn't give up trying to make something of yourself. No matter what's going on around you,
mm-hmm.
that you have to try to overcome. For instance, a way of looking at Dr. Hart's success is that he overcame the odds.
Yes, he did.
Right?
Yes.
But you could have many, many black youth overcome the odds if you had community supports, good education, and so on. It wouldn't be the
mm-hmm.
exception
mm-hmm.
of one getting through.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Cosby himself was an exception. He grew up in the projects, and he became quite successful. So because of his own experience of persevering, he wants to send a message to young people. Yeah, it's rough out there. There are drugs out there. There's crime. There's poverty. But keep trying to make something of yourself. Don't just yield to being a victim. That's what they want you to do. That's another way of demonizing you and exploiting you
yep.
to make you a victim.
There was a big petition sent to President Obama just in April, just a couple of months ago, calling for an end to the war on drugs. It was signed by lots of entertainers and everybody else, including civil rights leader Harry Belafonte, Julian Bond, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, right on down. Would you, Alvin Poussin, favor this broad decriminalization? Or are you afraid
that petition you just talked about, Obama?
I guess in terms of along the lines that Carl Hart is
laying. If Belafonte and Al Sharpton on, and I'll sign on.
Okay. But you hear Carl Hart saying decriminalize across a pretty wide range of illegal drugs here.
Would that work,
or are you afraid that would bring more drugs
in? I think that we have to look at that. And I think it takes a lot of heads, a lot of brains,
yes.
and people coming together to look at all aspects of it. What would be the fallout? What would happen to certain people in the population who could be classified as addicts?
Mm-hmm.
How would it play out economically
mm-hmm.
in affecting the black community or the entire country?
Mm-hmm.
I think all of those things would have to be discussed. You would need not just a think tank, but an action tank of people from all walks of life, the people who are affected, the families who are affected, the therapists, the social workers, everyone, the school teachers, to see how this would affect the institutions in America. Is at least it would be one way of dealing with what has amounted to institutional racism with the
mm-hmm.
war on drugs.
Carl Hart, paint the picture as you have imagined it. You've thought this through. If we went down this road, what would it look like? How would it be implemented? What would have to come along with the decriminalization?
Well, we have a model. In Portugal, they have decriminalized drugs. In 2001, they decriminalized all drugs. I think they have a great model. Their model is that when we are worried about people who are addicted. And certainly in their model leaves room to make sure people get treatment who needs treatment. For example, if people are caught with a certain amount of drug or caught with drugs in general for possession, they meet before an administrative board that is comprised of a physician, a social worker, somebody who has skills in terms of this health problem, if it's a health problem. They evaluate the person to see where the person needs to be, whether or not the person has a problem, and then they make a decision from there. The person may receive a fine. The person may not receive a fine. They may be sent to treatment. All depends on the evaluation. One of the things that's absent from this sort of board is law enforcement. And one of the things that I want to make clear here, this has been a major problem with U.S. drug policy. Law enforcement has had too much of a voice in terms of the effects of drugs, what drugs do, and drug policy. They have no training in pharmacology, no training in the behavioral sciences, but yet they're always asked to be at the table with a big voice. And that's part of the problem. In fact, the director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy is always a law enforcement official. The first thing we should do is correct that and place somebody there who actually knows something about drugs.
Why do you think we've gone this way as a nation? We vote with our feet or with our policy. Why have we, in our actions, preferred incarceration to the kind of approach you're suggesting, Carl?
Because people do not want to be seen as soft on crime, especially when the consequences of that action or those actions impact disproportionately Black people. If our prison populations look differently, I think that we would have some serious reconsideration of what we're doing.
Ashish is calling from Boston. Ashish, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just have a quick question for your physician guest. Mm-hmm. That he said that there is no scientific evidence that use or chronic use of drugs leads to cognitive issues or cognitive problems. Whereas mm-hmm. there are some studies that have been published over the years that show that people who abuse these illicit drugs and even drugs that are used for treatments of various conditions, such as chemotherapy drugs, do cause a lot of problems in the brain. You can see the brain actually shrinking. So what does he have to say on that? I mean, this is not a policy question. So
Ashish, what's your familiarity with this realm? Are you in the research business?
Yes, I am. I actually finished my research fellowship at the Harvard Medical School, and I'm looking to go into clinical training in neurology. So I was just wondering if this is something that I sort of completely have a bad sense of, or is there something that your guest has some other sort of,
insight on? I appreciate your call, Ashish. Carl Hart, how about it? You hear Ashish's skepticism there that there aren't cognitive issues tied to any number of these drugs.
Thank you. That's a great question. I'm more comfortable answering those questions. Ashish, one of the things that I did recently is that I did a review of the literature in terms of the cognitive literature and the brain imaging literature. When we look at a drug like methamphetamine, that drug people said was causing all of these cognitive disruptions and so forth. Now, what I concluded, and the paper is published in Neuropsychopharmacology 2012, What I found is that researchers have overinterpreted their data. When you actually look at the data, the cognitive impairments that were stated are not supported by the actual evidence. But please, I really encourage you to get the book. I detail this in Chapter 15 in that 2012 paper in Neuropsychopharmacology. Look up my name. We have overstated it even in science.
Susan in Boston. Thanks for calling, Susan. You're on.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling to agree with the doctor. I'm a neuroscientist myself. I study alcoholism. And I'm aware of how much worse alcohol is than some of the drugs that are being decriminalized in this country right now, particularly marijuana. And if you look at the public health data, Dave Nutt put out a paper in 2010 that showed that marijuana was much less harmful and alcohol to the individual users as well as to society. So that's one of the reasons why I think marijuana in particular should be decriminalized.
Susan, let me pick it up right there, if I may. Our time is short. Alvin Poussaint, Carl Hart, I'm looking at the Rolling Stone, the latest issue of Rolling Stone in front of me, and the cover headline is How We Won the War on Pot. I mean, the needle is moving on marijuana in this country. People are making a lot of comment about this. Mm-hmm. Dr. Poussaint, this is not and the first state where this is really happening in the biggest way is the quite white Colorado. Interesting that that's where the first sort of easing of the old regime has come, but not in the communities Carl Hart and you are focused
on. Well, I think that where our problems affecting whites or they're engaged in the behavior and the activity of drug use, they're going to find ways so that they're not going to be the victims of the police department and put into jail. They then have a vested interest in decriminalization of marijuana.
Their
they
kids,
want to smoke
themselves,
it.
Yeah.
And look, it's working, isn't it? Around the country, it seems to be spreading as a movement and even brought the federal government moving them to look at this in a new way. So I think it's important to bring these issues up, even with regard to other drugs like cocaine and even heroin, to look at what the effects would be and also to be realistic about who's using the drugs. White people use more crack cocaine than black people use offhand, but it's the black people who get arrested. And we have to do something about education and the myths that go with this. I remember because I dealt with families, all this information coming out about crack babies.
Yeah.
That if you had one shot of crack, you destroyed your baby if you were pregnant, and they would be damaged for life.
Yeah.
This turned out not to be true.
Carl Hart, we've got 15 seconds. Are you finding open ears to your argument, or back off, mister?
I think this conversation demonstrates that people have been receptive. I think the time is right, and I really appreciate having the opportunity to share the message with your listeners.
I want to thank you both for being with us today. Dr. Alvin Poussaint at Harvard Medical School, author of Lay My Burden Down. Dr. Poussaint, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
And Carl Hart, Dr. Carl Hart at Columbia University, professor of psychology there, author of High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery that challenges everything you know about drugs in society. Dr. Hart, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, we'll talk with conservative National Review editor Rich Lowry in this hour. Join us. This is On Point. Thank you.